Hello, and welcome to the Chronic Pain Experience podcast. I am your host and pain coach, Dina Chopoulos. If you're listening to this, chances are you've been grappling with pain for some time now, and you're searching for answers, solutions, anything that might offer relief. Well, you're in the right place. Living with chronic pain can often feel like navigating a maze with no end in sight. But here, we're not just aiming to manage the pain, we're on a quest to transform your relationship to it. As a chronic pain coach, I'm dedicated to bridging the gap between you and your physician with groundbreaking, evidence-based, transformative approaches. Together, we'll explore strategies, insights, and stories that empower you to reclaim control over your life and rewrite the narrative of pain. So, if you're ready to shift from merely surviving to thriving, join me on this journey. Together, we'll uncover the keys to unlocking a life beyond pain. Life with pain can lead you down a dark rabbit hole. A rabbit hole of pain, fear, frustration, sadness, grief, avoidance, isolation, and more. It is in this dark place where a deep sense of disbelief begins to grow. Disbelief in self, in your abilities, and the belief that things are only going to get worse. And that's what pain does. If you've been living with pain and you've heard the words, "There is nothing more we can do for you," it's helpful to start asking, "What is it that I can do for myself?" And that is exactly what our next guest has done. In today's episode, I'm inviting Hannah Studley to the conversation. After being mugged 3 times, Hannah recovered from severe injuries and 10 years of PTSD to go on to a very successful career in the film business, winning an Academy Award. Her innate resilience, personal experience, and training as a trauma counselor has come together to help countless people suffering with anxiety and stress. About 8 years ago, she came across a new paradigm in psychology called the Three Principles and noticed that her 25 years of chronic back pain, IBS, and allergies had all gone. Hannah took a deep dive into the mind-body connection, studying with medical doctors and psychologists, and is now helping many people find relief with their chronic physical issues. Understanding that our bodies have been screaming at us to slow down brings us freedom and lasting relief, which I love. Hannah is certified as a life coach with 30 years of experience. She has diplomas in psychology and is a World Health Organization psychological first responder. She is a successful author, international speaker, and runs a women's membership group where she supports women with insights into all of our life issues. Hannah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, this is great. Now, I have listened into some of your other interviews, which I have really found very fascinating. My first question is, how do you find rehashing your story over and over again? Do you find it painful? Have you been able to move beyond the painful reliving of stories while you're retelling it?
Wow, that's such a great question, and very relevant, because for many years, I would actually, looking back now, I would say that the trauma was the reliving of the story. Mm-hmm. Because the events that happened to me, as horrific as they were over in seconds, you know, maximum like minute, 2 minutes, you know, like when 3 men beat me up and I was screaming for my life, absolutely terrifying, over quickly.
Yeah.
The reliving, which is what PTSD is, reliving and reliving of it for years, a decade, if not more, that was painful, because you were bringing the pain of what happened back into this moment all the time. And I remember struggling to get to, my family doctor sent me to a psychiatrist at Manchester Royal Infirmary. That's where I was living at the time. And she said, "Tell me the story." I'm like, okay. So I told her, she said, "Tell me again." And that was her therapy, to keep telling the story. And I'm like, "We do that really well at home. I need help not to do that."
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's, you know, they say they've changed it, but from what I hear from clients now, like, therapists still want to dive people back into the painful past.
Right.
So what's different now is, now that I understand how the mind works, I can tell you the story in graphic detail, because my mood and my perspective are completely different. The facts are still true. Like, I'm not in denial. It still happened. But my perspective on it is very different.
Mm.
So I can tell it in quite graphic detail, and it's not affecting me because it's not happening right now.
Oh,
You know?
perfect. And that is, I think, really why I was most excited about bringing you on board is that your story is such a story of hope. Your story is that doing the deep dive into the work so that you can come out the other side and tell the story without having to relive it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know you've been telling it quite a few times. So that's just probably the best example we have for our people who might be watching or listening in is that there is hope and that there is work we can do to help you through that. Thank you. That was probably always my biggest concern when I do an interview is, you know, sometimes we dig into the deep stuff and it might be difficult, might be challenging, but you've done the work. So for many people who live with pain, there's this whole principle of the rabbit hole. So, you know, and it takes many different forms, you know, a rabbit hole of despair, of fear, of isolation, of also seeking that next doctor that might be more helpful or that next appointment that might help you finally get some answers. What did the rabbit hole look like and feel like for you?
Yeah, it was long and deep. And I didn't know my pain could go away because I had these injuries. You know, the doctor, whenever I talked to a doctor, a chiropractor, osteopath, all the people I would go see, and I'd give them my medical history, you know, starting from the top, fractured skull, broken neck, you know, go down and down, like three herniated discs. They go, well, that's why you're in pain, you know. And so I kind of carried around a story with me that my body was broken and weak. For example, I can remember going to the chiropractor one time. I used to have these flare-ups about every 6 weeks, and I'd be bent forward, bent sideways, sciatica pain shooting down my leg. You know, I had a walking stick at the age of 27. You know, and I saw the chiropractor every month for 25 years. And one time, I remember going, and I was bent and twisted and in agony. And she said, "What happened this time?" And I said, "Well, you know, I turned to put my seatbelt on in my car," and she said, "Well, that'll do it." When I think about it now, I was in my 30s. How could putting your seatbelt on damage your body to that point where you're in agony lying on the floor? So it kind of reinforced this idea that my body was weak. So my second book, Painless, which is about chronic pain, there's the cover. I'm dressed up as Frida Kahlo. I don't know if you know
I've
who
seen
Frida
all of
Kahlo
that.
is, right? So I chose her as a character because there's a famous painting of hers where she paints herself with her spine as a like a Greek column, like of a Acropolis type building, you know, and it's all chipped and broken and crumbling. And that's how I imagine my spine to be. You know, if just one twist in the wrong direction, one heavy thing too many, and I am just going to crumble. And that's a painful story to carry around with you. It limits your life. It makes your world very small. I just knew that the next time I have a flare up and I get stuck on the floor, maybe that's going to be it. Because I was actually paralyzed a couple of times where I couldn't move my body from my chest down. And luckily it was temporary, but at the time you don't know that, right? And I remember thinking, this is it. This is when it doesn't come back. This is, I'm going to be on my back for the rest of my life, surgeries and in wheelchairs. And I lived like that for 20, over almost 30 years. And now I tell you, on Friday, I ran the 10K of the Jerusalem Marathon, and I was 6 seconds quicker than last year.
I saw that on Facebook and I just had a huge smile on my face because I know what you've been through. That is fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is amazing. You know what? Another reason why I'm so excited to have you on here is because I know you're also that message of, and actually the first time we connected through the form that you filled out, you had stated that let's talk about you are not broken. And that's really the important message of all of this is that because all too often our chronic pain community are really hearing those words, maybe not those words exactly, but the words fixing, you know, the words damaged or there's nothing more we can do or really does not lead to a place of hope, does it?
I thought I was broken and damaged and I needed fixing, not just my body, but my anxiety, my, you know, the PTSD, all that stuff. And it was like a lifetime challenge to fix myself. And I was, you know, like everybody, I got stuck in the self-help aisle at the bookstore. You know, I was doing the meditation and the expressive writing and the Pilates and the yoga and the massage. And I had a massage machine. I had the, you know, the yoga mat, the ice packs, you know, like it
Right.
was just like a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so when I came across these new ideas and I saw like one of the first things I saw that is that we can never be broken. And for sure, our bodies can get damaged. You know, you can break a bone, you can, you know, we can get diseases, but the body has an incredible intelligence to heal itself.
That's right.
So one of the first things I learned was that my injuries had healed 25 years ago,
Right.
right? The herniated disc, the fractured skull, everything had healed. So why was I still in so much pain?
Exactly.
So as I started like understanding the mind-body connection and seeing that my pain was actually coming from stress and anxiety, I think that's why my pain went away is because I started to understand how my mind works and that I was always feeling my thinking. So the brokenness was actually an illusion. That story, that heavy story I was carrying around was literally just a story that was passing through my mind. And so I started to see that I am not broken. My injuries have healed, and the absolutely agonizing pain I was experiencing was actually my body screaming at me to stop. And I think the fixing that I was doing was what it needed to stop. It's so ironic now that when I
Yes.
stopped going to the chiropractor and I stopped all the treatments, that's when I got better.
Right. Oh, that has so much power in it. I can't tell you how many clients I have who needed to hear that message. And that is what we need to work through, is that we are really primed to believe that there, you know, that there's multiple directions to take when it comes to a fix. And first of all, the fix is a tough word in itself, right? Not everyone's going to feel less pain. However, or pardon me, is going to be pain-free. We may not fix that herniated disc completely, but a herniated disc does not necessarily mean that amount of pain, just like you said, right? And we get so caught up in the biological piece, we completely disregard the rest, whether it be the thoughts, the beliefs, the patterns, the experiences, the trauma, the isolation, all of these factors, anxiety, right? They all come into play. So, wow, this is big. You know, even if we just stop here, I think our listeners have got gained so much. Now, I'm really glad you brought up the idea of story because I think it's an important conversation. When we talk about story, you know, it's not to suggest at all that it's all made up or that it's all in our head, right? But your pain story, just like so many other pain stories, is, you know, easy to get stuck into. And how would you say you kind of got stuck in your story? What sort of words, what sort of story were you telling yourself when you were in that much pain?
Yeah, it was really like this is it. You know, like this is who I am. I am my history, I am my pain. You know, I have to have a pillow, I have to have my walking stick, I have to, you know, make allowances for it. It was a story of limitation and it's very heavy and intense. And that's how I started recognizing that it was a story because now we can all have, you know, a physical issue. Like you could get the, you know, the flu, you can break a bone, you can, you know, have a stomach problem. And then there's the thinking about it. Right. Right. So it's like there may be some physical things. I work with people who do have, you know, like there is something that they maybe congestive heart failure. It's not going to get better. But then there's the story about, you know, people aren't treating me right and the doctor's messed up the medication and my kids don't come to visit. And you know, that's what we're actually suffering with. Right? Like there's a famous saying, I think it says, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional.
Oh, yes.
Right?
It's true.
So when I started seeing that the stories are made of thoughts that are just passing through my mind, I started to recognize that those heavy feeling stories and thoughts, I didn't actually have to listen to them. And most of the time they were unreliable and not even true. You know, like this is where it's always going to be. Well, clearly it wasn't. You know, that was a lie.
Right.
So
That's why these
I'm.
conversations are so important, so people can really hear someone who has come out the other side, right?
It's passed on.
Right. I'm curious to know what really was your turning point, or what was the moment that really helped you to sort of pivot back then?
Well, Actually, there wasn't. That was the curious thing, because like I said, I didn't know the pain could go away because I was always told it was coming from these injuries. It wasn't until my pain went away that I started investigating and finding out how and why this all works. So what happened was I trained as a coach back in college in Manchester in the 1980s. I worked for Manchester Rape Crisis, which is, it's kind of alarming now to think that there were only two rape crisis centers in the country, like one in London and one in Manchester in the early 80s. It was a very new idea. To me, it doesn't feel like very long ago, but it was very new that women, could get together and support each other. And so I was trained to answer the hotline and to coach people, to go and talk to lawyers and, to be an advocate. And so ever since then, I'd always been into whatever the latest, like the into A Course in Miracles and the Enneagram and, whatever was, like I lived in Southern California when I was doing my movie career. There was plenty to get into over there,
Yes.
And so when I came across this new paradigm in psychology, which we're calling the three principles, I was really excited about it because the main idea is there's nothing to do. And I'm like, what? But we have to fix, we have to do, right? Like, I think chronic pain people are very, tell me what to do, I'll just do it. And this blew my mind because it totally made sense. Once you understand that your thoughts are always moving through your mind, there it's like a constant flow. You could like analogy of clouds or traffic. It's a constant flow of energy going through your mind. Once I saw that, then I started realizing there was actually nothing to do to fix my thinking. Because every thought I've ever had has moved on. And any of the writing and reframing and analyzing I was doing, it was actually messing with the system because it was like dragging that thought back into my mind to try and work out how to make it leave. Well, it already left, right? So when I started seeing that I wasn't broken, there was nothing to fix, understanding and insight were way more powerful than any of the treatments and fixing I was doing. I think my nervous system got the message that I was safe.
Yes.
My thinking calmed down. My brain is now not in permanent fight or flight like what had been for so long. So the pain didn't serve a purpose anymore. Injuries have healed. My brain knows I'm safe. There is no need for pain. Now, I see that now as kind of a language. Because I can still, I describe myself as being pain-free, but I can still get a twinge every now and again, or, like a flare-up of something. But it's minute compared to what it was. And to me, it's like a little tap on the shoulder now. It's like, hold on, what's happened? Did you just get up in your head? You can, I don't even really have anxiety anymore, but I can get concerned about things or disappointed like anybody else. My stomach might start to rumble or my skin gets itchy or all the many things that I used to have. And now I just see it as signals. Like when you feel hungry, your tummy rumbles. If I start to get anxious, my shoulders get tight and my back starts to ache. And now I can hear it, whereas before I couldn't. And so it had to scream at me to literally physically stop me and get me lying on the floor and I can't move before I would listen. Now I understand the language of my body. And it talks to me sometimes, and not in words, but just in sensations. I'm like, okay, I know, slow down, stop it.
Beautiful. That's what
That
pain
is freedom.
is. Yeah. Freedom, absolutely. And that's such a beautiful awareness too. You've come so far to realize that this pain is here for a purpose. It's here signaling to me. It's telling me something. That's exactly its physiological premise. That's what it does. And it's so powerful, isn't it? What it can make us do or not do,
Right, because and it's true of all pain, because like there's acute pain and chronic pain. So if you twist your ankle, it's gonna hurt probably immediately because your brain will assess to keep walking on a twisted ankle, you could cause more damage. But for example, let's think like maybe a soldier who's in combat might get a severe injury and they might not feel anything because the brain knows that if they stop right now, that could be fatal. They've got to get back to safety. And then it's probably going to hurt like crazy. But so when I started seeing that pain can be switched on and off, and it's actually quite an unreliable indicator of what's happening in my body, and my thinking is an unreliable indicator of my circumstances, that when I started to understand this, I didn't have to be a victim of my circumstances anymore, or my body, or my pain, and everything calms down.
Right.
And, you know, it's just not on my radar anymore.
Right. Oh, you. For those who are listening on the podcast version, I have a huge grin on my face because hitting on all the important points. One thing I want to just backpedal a little bit, because I think it was a really important point to make. When it comes to the language, and I think we sometimes take for granted how powerful words really are. And you gave an example of kind of how both ends of the spectrum are really important. So, you know, the words from the dark side are, you know, well, you've got the back of an 80-year-old, or you're never going to get better, or there's nothing more we can do. You flip that narrative into more of, you know, the words that are supportive, like I'm not broken, I don't need fixing, or I, you know, all of these flips of the narrative are really an important part of that chronic pain management. And in the sciencey side of things, it's called a nocebo. Nocebo is something that is opposite from placebo. You know, placebo will help you feel good. Those words can be used for both, right? So either it's going to be a nocebo where it's like causing more pain, or it's going to be something to use to your advantage. And so you are a great example of how you turn those words around. That's powerful.
Yeah, I would go even further and see that I started having nothing on any of those words. Because if I'm just exchanging words, what I personally found is having better thinking about my pain was just better thinking. I mean, obviously it's better than negative thinking, but what if I had nothing on it at all? Right? And so that's where the stories started to go away. And I think the pressure started to leave, is because I'd done a lot of that kind of reframing and thinking positive stuff. And I was really good at thought hygiene.
Oh, it's exhausting.
Right? Yes. Can't have that negative thought, only have positive thoughts. But that's also a lot of work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if my brain, if I'm trying to send a message to my brain that I'm safe, but I've kind of got the armor on, you know, keeping all the negative stuff away, then I'm still sending a message to my brain that there's something to protect myself from. Even negative thoughts, right? So we can go even further upstream and see that all thoughts, I started seeing that all thought is neutral, and it's only my reaction to them that's going to create the experience, which is what the brain and the nervous system are picking up on. So I could have, you know, like say I have a twinge in my back. I could go, oh my gosh, this shouldn't be happening. I'm a pain coach. I shouldn't have pain. Blah, blah, blah. No, let's reframe it. Can you hear that conversation? My shoulders just went up. It's an anxious conversation, even though I'm trying to not react and I'm trying to be positive. Right. What if I had nothing on it at all? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way I often explain this to people is like when kids are little and they're, you know, like 2 or 3 year olds and they're just learning language, they often go ball, hat, you know, blue.
Yes.
Right? They're excited to do it in their language and use their words, because they're describing what they see. But as adults, we know it's a cat, we know it's a ball, you know it's blue. You don't actually have to label it. That's a cognitive reaction. Adults don't do that. Like, I'm looking at you, I can see a green plant on a white pot and a white shaft behind you. I knew that was there without using those words. So I know what my pain feels like without having to describe it, convince myself. And here's something else I've always found fascinating with the kind of affirmation thing is, people often say that they tell themselves that they're safe, they're strong, they're beautiful, they're successful, you know, and I'd say, who are you talking to? Right? Because part of you knows that you're strong and courageous and beautiful and successful, and part of you doesn't. Why don't we go with this one? There is no part of you. You already know that you are strong, because if you're trying to convince yourself, then there must be part of you that believes that, right? So I've kind of just, you know, chucked that voice out the window and just go with this one, and know that that's who we really are. That was a big part of my, I guess, my pivot and recovery, of seeing that I have innate health, innate resilience. Yes. It's not something I have to manufacture and bring in from the outside. It's who we are.
Right.
Underneath the stories and underneath the thinking, we have this innate health, and it's there for everybody.
Right. I think it's easy to lose sight of how incredible our systems really are when you
Yeah.
like you're broken, but truly and honestly, just like you said, yeah, we are incredible healing platforms. So well done. Now you did touch on the three principles, and I'm just wondering if you'd like to share with our listeners what those three principles are.
Yeah, it's I mean, this is where I start fumbling, because these are spiritual principles, so it is hard to describe, and it really isn't like any of the other modalities and techniques and therapies that I tried, because the principles are the foundation of how all those other things work. So just if people are curious, it's mind, thought, and consciousness, right? Because without mind, thought, and consciousness, we're not going to function, right? So the way I explained it to one of my friends when I got really excited about it, my friend is a caterer. And so I thought, I tried to come up with a food analogy to explain it. So I said to her, imagine you had a bakery. You would probably have to order the same basic ingredients over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. Flour, eggs, sugar, oil, salt. And she would make cakes and bread and, you know, pies, all kinds of beautiful things. A Mexican baker is also ordering flour, eggs, sugar, oil, salt, and making tortillas and whatever they're making.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a New York baker is making, you know, donuts and bagels and bear claws with flour, eggs, sugar, salt. A French baker is making crepes and gâteaux, you know.
Right.
So my point is, there are millions of bakers around the world who are using some very basic ingredients and producing billions of different kinds of baked goods. So mind, thought, and consciousness are the foundation of all psychology. So if you were to boil down everything from Freudian analysis to NLP, DBT, CBT, EMDR, EFT, BBC, NBC,
just kidding, yes.
of therapies out there. If you were to boil them down, you would come to mind, thought, and consciousness. So when people say to me, yeah, but my acupuncture works or my therapy works, I'd say, it's because you slowed down. So that 30 minutes, that 45 minutes, whatever it was, you know, whether someone's listening to you or someone's giving you some attention, some treatment, you probably relaxed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you slowed down. And that's what was actually healing you.
Mm-hmm.
And our innocent misunderstanding, and I stress innocent purposely, because, you know, I innocently went back to the chiropractor again and again and again for decades, because I always felt better afterwards. And also with the writing or the walking on the beach, whatever it is that makes you feel better. I innocently thought the calm and the healing was coming from the treatments or the beach or that hot bath. But when I started to see, it was in those situations that I was actually slowing down and getting back in touch with my innate well-being. That's who we really are. And I realize now I can do that anytime. I don't have to go. I love the beach, right?
Yes.
But I don't have to go to the beach to do that, because it's who I am. It's like, we are the blue sky. You know, once the storm has gone through and the clouds have passed, you don't have to order blue sky from Amazon. It's there. It's who we are.
Yeah.
So when my all those stories and stinky thinking started to fall away, it just revealed that innate well-being and that amazing healing machine that was there all the time. So I think the principles to me have really been it's an understanding. It's not a doing, it's a seeing.
Right.
It's a description, if you like, rather than a prescription. So it's a description of how experience is created, how we experience thought and emotions. And when you understand how something works, it takes away a lot of the fear and anxiety. So it's an understanding rather than a doing.
Mm-hmm. Ah, well said. I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, now I think we've touched on a couple of them already, but when we first were going to connect, you brought forward three main points that we were going to discuss, and I'm going to bring them up now. I just want to make sure we've covered it all, to make sure that there wasn't anything we missed, because there's some good nuggets. We know that all injuries heal, right? Unless there is an acute issue, which can happen at the same time as chronic, right? We live in a thought-created world 100% of the time, which I think we're going to expand on a little bit. And then finally, and we don't need to do anything to fix our thinking. So we have touched on that one. Can we explore a little bit more that we live in a thought created world 100% of the time?
Yeah, this was one of the amazing insights I got when I came around the principles, you know, because for the longest time, I thought the way I felt was because of something on the outside of me, whether it was a relationship, the pain, the trauma, my childhood, you know, where I lived, my job, my boss, the weather, music, you name it. I love to blame. You know, if only they would behave, if only this was different, if only my pain would go away, you know. And everybody has a different list of things that they think if it would change, I'll be better. Like lose a few pounds, get a new relationship, get that promotion, a different car, a different, you know, I moved countries, I changed jobs. And I kept taking my thinking with me wherever I would go into these new situations. And so I kind of came to the place where I saw that everything on the outside of me, none of it can make me feel anything. Mm-hmm. Right? Like we started off by talking about the trauma. It's like, even if I think about, I cannot actually get upset about my trauma anymore. I don't even regard it as trauma. It was then, it was tragic. But because one of the most healing things I think is a good mood. Mm. Never underestimate the healing power of a good mood, yeah. Right? Laughter, you know, all those kind of things. Because that's where I started to see that when I started to understand moods and how they go up and down. Mm. And moods were terrifying to me before. I'd get into a mood probably for a decade, and like my teens and my 20s, I was in a bad mood, you know. But now I see them as extremely useful because they're letting me know the quality of my thinking. And it's a very reliable system. If you think about it, if you have low, miserable, grumpy thinking, you cannot be in a good mood. Mm. And if you're having joyful, abundant thinking, you cannot be in a low mood. Right. So the mood is letting me know the quality of my thinking. I am constantly living in these different levels of mood that are letting me know where my thinking is going. And so now I understand that I can tell whether it's heading in a downward direction. And I know for me what that looks like now. It means I lose my sense of humor. I start to get serious. I start blaming people out there or situations. Then the language, like, it's never going to get better. And it's always like this. And I have to do everything.
Right. Kind of,
right. And then we all have a repertoire of how we act out when we're in a low mood. Some people eat too much. Some people don't eat enough. Some people get loud and controlling. Other people turn into victims, you know, and we all have the games that we play with, but all of that is happening inside my head.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, because if you think about it, like, I mean, for example, when I worked in the film business, I worked with the most famous, mega rich, you know, beautiful, gorgeous, amazing, famous, successful people. And they weren't all happy, right? Right? Some of them were, but a lot of them weren't. You know, they thought the next movie or the next big car or the trip to wherever is going to fix it, you know? And then where I live now, you know, I live in Israel. I'm in Jerusalem right now. And we're, you know, dealing with another war. And I've got neighbors who've got 6 kids living in a 2-bedroom apartment, and they're okay.
Wow.
They might like a 3rd bedroom, but they're okay, you yeah. know? It's got nothing to do with the outside. Like, even, you know, when the war started and the, you know, my building was shaking, sirens are going off, explosions, you know, I'm sure my blood pressure went up a little bit, but then it came down and you do the laundry and you feed the cat and you get on with it.
Wow.
Or you can live in the fear and the anxiety.
Right.
And what I see now is I'm always living in the feeling of my thinking, not my circumstances.
Mm.
Two people can be in exactly the same situation. And this is what I always say to my clients. Think of a time when you watched a movie with a partner or a, you know, a loved one, a friend, and one of you is loving it and one of you is hating it.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen, right? So who's right?
Mm.
Meaning it can't be the movie or the music or the sports, whatever it is that's creating the experience. It's our thinking about it.
Right.
You know, and there's lots of factors there, you know, culture, environment, experience, you know. But I'm feeling those factors,
right.
Not the circumstances.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your book? I know you have 3 books now, too.
Yes, I have 3 books out. Thank you. The first one is called The Myth of Low Self-Esteem, and that's about the trauma and all the experiences that happened to me. And I thought it would be the only book I ever write, because, you know, that's, I, it was funny on the, it was the second book, and I said, I heard myself saying, I'm not a writer, but I have to stop saying that now. Right. So the first one I thought was my only book. And so I put the Hollywood stuff in there and the trauma and the discovering these ideas in that book. The second one, which might be more interesting to your listeners, is called Painless. And it really describes the pain journey I went on. These books are stories, they're novels, because I find not everybody loves reading research like I do. So I took the research and turned it in to useful for characters. The characters in the book do the falling down and the searching and the getting up and the happy ending. So they the main character in these books, they do the, you know, they have the pain and they find out what's going on and they you know, get to recover and share that with other people. And so that's a pain adventure novel. It goes from London, I think, to Australia, to Los Angeles. It's an international story. And then the latest one came out exactly a year ago, and it's called Very Well. And it's a hormone adventure novel. This one's about hormones. And so the main character is a mother. She has two daughters. One has postpartum depression. The other one has PMDD, which is a very severe menstrual condition. And the mother is going into menopause. So there's still a lot of physical stuff in that. And they also, you know, do the suffering. They discover how their mind works and they get well and share it with other people. So those are the three books. They're all on Amazon. And right now I'm just about to publish my fourth book. Amazing. And this one is more of a textbook. It's called Beyond Diagnosis, and I hope it to be out in about a month, maybe. So email me if you want to be on the list for this one. And I collected about 45 personal stories of people who've recovered from all kinds of mental health diagnoses through this understanding of the three principles, from psychosis to bulimia to, and a lot of physical things like long COVID and fibromyalgia, you know, Lyme disease, they're in there too. And it's just full of hope. You know, that you, like I said, you're not broken, you don't need fixing. And here is, like, I think I had 70 contributors in the end pointing to the fact that you can get well and there's always hope.
Right.
So that should be out like in about another month, I think. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
Second, you are a writer and so much more, but big news. And also on you're also a runner, apparently. So that's amazing. Well, is there anything else you want to mention that perhaps we've missed in our conversation? Important.
Yeah, I think the only other thing is the membership group. I think that's, you know, it's a wonderful place to get support and to, you know, talk with other people who are going through the same thing you're going through. And so I have this monthly membership group, and it's all on my website, which is my name, hannahstudley.com. And through there, you can contact me. And so if you want to, you know, hear about the latest books. The Very Well one was an Amazon bestseller for a few days. So hoo-hoo,
amazing. That was,
yeah. So hopefully this one will be too. Contact me there. I've got a YouTube channel, the website, and you know, there's lots of free information there too.
Amazing. Thank you. I appreciate your message. I appreciate all the work you're doing. And thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Chronic Pain Experience Podcast. If this episode sparked any aha moments, or if you're looking to connect directly with me, I encourage you to book a free 30-minute call. No sales, no strings attached, just an opportunity to assess where you are right now and what next steps could be. You will find a booking link in the show notes. If you found this episode helpful, make sure to subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of my new releases. And finally, if you want to connect with others who share the same lived experience as you, then I would love to invite you inside our free community exclusively for chronic pain warriors and away from the noise and advertising of Facebook. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to meeting you.